Hello and welcome to the Affinity Finance podcast. Today I'm joined by the wonderful Michelle Farlow of A&M Bacon. Michelle joined A&M Bacon in 2016 as a costs lawyer and was appointed the civil team leader in 2019. Michelle started working in costs in 2009 and qualified in 2013. She is the 2013 Gold Cup winner of the Association of Costs Lawyers for the highest overall combined coursework and examination results over the three-year qualifying course. Michelle has considerable experience in civil inter-parties costs and has a particular interest in commercial, personal injury and clinical negligence matters. Michelle, it's great to be chatting with you today. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me.
So today we are going to be talking about the new cost budgeting rules. Now, I know there was a change to cost budgeting in October. Can you tell me about the main changes?
Yes, that's right. So as part of the 122nd update to the civil procedure rules, which came into effect on the 1st of October 2020, the cost management rules have had a bit of a revamp. So some provisions have been removed, there's been some additions, and the structure is a little bit different from before. So briefly taking some of the points by term and starting with what has been removed. So prior to the changes, the key cost management provisions were split across three areas. So we had CPR 3.12 to 3.18, Practice Direction 3E, and the Supporting Guidance Note, or Annex B, as it was also known. And since October, there's no longer a standalone guidance note. This has been completely removed, but the contents have essentially been condensed into the rules or the practice direction. So subject to a few exceptions and key changes, which I'll come on to shortly, the contents largely remain the same, albeit it's perhaps in a different place and in a little bit of a different order. But essentially, we now have two key areas to look at in relation to cost management, being CPR 3.12 to 3.18 and Practice Direction 3E. So let me just talk about the main change. I think the most significant change has got to be in relation to the insertion of CPR 3.15A. And this new section is all about revisions and variations of budgets. So it's now compulsory for a party to revise its budgeted costs, and that's upwards or downwards, if significant developments in the litigation warrant such revisions. So unfortunately, as per the previous rules, the term significant development remains undefined, but it is now clear the rules place a positive and mandatory duty on parties to monitor their budgets and take action. So the rule itself, being the new insertion of 3.15A, does set out the process for how budget revisions should be dealt with, and there's an emphasis that any revisions should be submitted promptly to the other parties for agreement, first of all, and then subsequently to the court. I'd recommend people have a look at that particular rule because the process is set out, but it's worth highlighting that the way that you have to deal with budget revisions is by using the precedent T form, which is now annexed to the practice direction. So just to talk about the precedent T form a little bit more, it's a completely brand new form in Excel format, and it's essentially made up of two tabs. So the first tab allows the revising party to set out the value of the variations in monetary terms. And the second tab allows for a written explanation to be provided regarding the significant development, and it operates again phase by phase basis. There is also space on that precedent T for the other party to provide any opposing comments on the variations. So as I say, I think that's the main change in relation to the rule since October in relation to budget revisions and how it's now a mandatory option that has to be considered by the parties as cost management proceeds. I think it's also worth mentioning another change at this point, and that change comes in paragraph 9 of Practice Direction 3E, and this now provides that costs which are disputed, such as the need for a particular expert, should be set out in the appropriate phase of the budget and, if necessary, marked as disputed. So previously, parties may have put disputed costs in as a contingency. For example, if the direction regarded the instruction of, say, a medical expert was disputed, they might have decided to put that separately in a contingency so that it was easy to work with the figures in isolation in relation to that point of the budget. But it's now clear that such costs need to go in the appropriate phase. So in the example I've just given, in the expert report phase. As a bit of an aside, it'll be interesting to see how that happens in practice, as the disputed costs will need to be identified separately in some way within the phase. So we might see the assumptions being used to explain what's disputed and putting a value against that, which is something that's a little bit new. So as I said, be interesting to see how that pans out for us. But essentially, I think that's the main changes. And just to emphasise that things may look slightly different and in a bit of a different order. So it's definitely worth double checking rule provisions and references if you're referring to them in correspondence or court documents.
Brilliant. Thank you so much, Michelle. That's extremely useful. So am I right in thinking then cost budgeting is still important?
Yes, very much so. So although budgeting's been around now since 2013, and we've seen lots of tweaking of the rules over the years, it's very much here to stay. So although budgeting has taken a bit of getting used to across the profession, the general consensus is that it is a positive thing, and it really does help focus the parties in the litigation. It also reduces the disputes at the cost of assessment stage, or at least it should do. And it does enable parties to obtain very reasonable payments on account of costs at the conclusion of a claim, which is obviously very good for receiving parties. I think budgeting is also really important because it has a significant impact on the ability to recover costs on a standard basis. This is because you will need good reason to depart from a budget. So it's really important legal professionals embrace the concept, get it right for the sake of the clients, and also give it the time and attention it deserves. If it isn't grasped properly and given the proper attention it needs, it could open up legal professionals to complaints from their clients, which is obviously something everyone wants to avoid. Lastly, I think it's worth mentioning on this point that if a party fails to file a budget in time, there is an automatic sanction in the rules. And this can be found in CPR 3.14, whereby if a party fails to file that budget in time, they'll be treated as having filed a budget comprising of the court fees only. So this really highlights the need to get it right and how important cost management is. And there's definitely a clear message within the rules that those who don't engage and don't take it seriously will face the ultimate sanction.
Okay, so how does it impact solicitors' cost recovery?
Yeah, so when there's a cost management order in place, a budget will be the key reference point when it comes to recovering costs from another party. And this is because budgeting is predominantly an inter-parties concept and it bites on a phase-by-phase basis. So what this essentially means is where there's a standard basis assessment, the phase allowance within the budget cannot be departed from unless there's good reason. This is something that's provided for in the rules at CPR 3.18. So on the one hand, this should give certainty and it means that at the conclusion of a case, the receiving party, providing they've got the cost order in their favour, will get their budgeted costs in full. But it means that any overspend will not automatically follow, and that receiving party will need to show good reason and get over that hurdle to be able to recover those budgeted costs. So this means the budget will very much impact the level of costs listers can recover on behalf of their clients. And just to talk about good reason a little bit more, good reason will be case specific. And if the term isn't defined in the rules, unfortunately. It will be something that needs to be considered individually. And if you can't show that good reason, your costs will be capped to the level of the budgeted costs in that phase. This means that there would be a shortfall potentially between the amounts recovered into parties and the amounts that a solicitor has actually incurred on behalf of their clients and the amount that would be due from their client on a solicitor own client basis. Finally, just touching on this particular point about impacting cost recovery, I think it's now worth mentioning that given the change in the rules in October, whereby budget revisions are now mandatory through the new CPR 3.15a, solicitors' costs could be impacted more than ever. This is because the ability to depart from a budget at the conclusion of a case using the good reason avenue might be more uncertain and arguably harder to overcome. After all, there's probably going to be a lot of arguments around and submissions by parties that a revision should have taken place earlier. So it'll be quite interesting to see how case law develops in that area and how parties are dealing with those sorts of arguments.
Yeah, all very, very interesting. Michelle, I know you have a wealth of experience in this industry. Now, what advice would you give to solicitors going forward? Obviously, there's a lot of changes and things like that. So what would you say is the best advice?
Yeah, I think it has to be for solicitors to keep their budgets under review. Okay. And remember that there's now that mandatory provision which places a duty on parties to revise their budgets. And sometimes it can be forgotten that that duty to revise actually works upwards as well as downwards. So we most commonly see budget revisions in terms of solicitors wanting a higher allowance to increase their budget. But in the context of a downwards revision, that's also really important for some parties. Just to touch on an example, if a solicitor was acting for a party defending a case and there was an admission of liability, but their budget had been, and the other side's budget had been approved at a point where it was assumed liability would be contested throughout, naturally that strikes as a potential significant development which would warrant the budget coming down, because it means there's less work and less time going to be involved. And also, if you do identify a need to revise a budget, it's highly recommended that you act promptly and don't let costs go too far ahead without it being addressed. I think another bit of good advice to share is for solicitors to treat the budget as a live document, which is in existence for the duration of the claim. So it shouldn't be seen as something that it's just prepared at some point of the litigation and sort of forgotten about. It needs to be constantly reviewed. So although it sounds quite a simple bit of advice, I think what I would suggest is solicitors actually, once the cost management order has been made, is for them to set some diary entries to make sure that the budget is going to be regularly monitored. It's so easy for solicitors to be focusing on the litigation at hand, and time and cost can run away. So just by having, you know, a simple diary reminder in periodically, it just brings the focus back to the budget to make sure that the expenditure that's been incurred is cross-referenced back to those budgeted allowances. This is obviously important from an inter-parties perspective because of the impact on the cost recovery, which we've already touched on today. But the monitoring exercise can also provide a useful and valuable tool for advising clients on costs. So the budget can be used to manage the client's expectations about how the case is progressing, and also to manage the expectations if there's going to be any potential shortfall in what the budget allows and what actually it might take them to run their case. The last bit of advice I can give is really in relation to how the budget works. So I've touched on it at various points so far that it operates on a phase by phase basis. So it's not enough to just look at your total work in progress figure against the total budget. That won't give you a true indication of how you're doing against the budget or how your cost recovery is going to be impacted. It needs to be phase by phase. And monitoring can be more effectively achieved and more efficiently achieved if a solicitor is time recording by litigation phase. By recording by litigation phase, it's hopefully a lot quicker to do that cross-reference back to the individual phases. Whereas if you aren't time recording by phase, it's going to take a lot more of a manual manipulation and looking through all of the file to be able to get to that same point. So I think that's the key areas of advice I'd like to share.
Thank you so much. That's really beneficial. And I hope that a lot of our law firms and anybody listening takes that on board, because that's really beneficial. Thank you. So tell me, where do you cost professionals fit in?
Yeah, so as cost professionals, we can be involved throughout the whole cost management process. So essentially, it allows solicitors to concentrate on the case at hand and for us to take some of that work pressure away. It just allows the set skills to be focused in the right area, so solicitors can use their expertise running the litigation and the costs experts dealing with the cost aspects of the claim. You only have to look at some of the directions orders that a company notices for costs and case management conferences to appreciate just how time consuming and in relation to the number of directions that the parties have to meet in relation to cost management, with often some really important timescales. So it's just a way of us taking that pressure away and giving the best possible cost management service to the solicitors and their clients.
Yeah, so I think you can take away that headache.
Yes.
Headache that many of our firms deal with.
Yes, definitely. And so just to give a bit of an insight into the type of work we do on a day-to-day basis at A&M Bacon, we can be involved right from the outset. So that will involve budget preparation. We can assist with negotiations leading up to the cost and case management conference, and also the preparation of what's called the budget discussion report, which is another mandatory form that has to be used. We can deal with the advocacy at the costs and case management conference in respect of budgets. We can be involved with budget monitoring. We can also deal with budget revisions as and when they're required. And also at the cost assessment stage, so when the main litigation is concluded and it comes to recovery of costs. And also if things don't quite go to plan, we can also be involved with applications for relief from sanctions. And I think it's also useful to mention that the costs associated with the cost management process are recoverable in the event of a favourable costs order. And I would invite the audience to just have a look at the details about the recoverable costs, which can be found in CPR 3.15, subsection 5. So that gives a bit of a summary of where we can help on a day-to-day basis. But we can also offer training to solicitors on budgeting. So that could be in relation to the rules or perhaps case law developments. So as I mentioned earlier, some of the key terms provided in the rules, such as significant development and good reason, they aren't defined, but they are developing through case law. So having cost professionals like us on board allows us to share that knowledge with our solicitor clients. So I appreciate today has been a very quick, high-level summary of the new cost budgeting rules, but I would invite the audience to get in contact if they've got any specific queries or anything they might like to chat through.
Michelle, it's been lovely to host today's podcast with you. Thank you ever so much for providing such a great overview. And as always, thank you to our listeners.